He tried to kill me with a backhoe.
It's Magnum Podcast. I'm Jason Snell, joined as always by Philip Michaels and David J. Lohr. Hi, guys.
Wait, isn't this the Saber's Sting Podcast? I've been misinformed.
Hello, Jason. I am your faithful manservant with an accent of no known origin. I've made you babushkas.
Hold on a second. There's a backhoe that's being transported outside my house. I need to.
Well, I guess you've just got to wait for that backhoe to creep up on you.
Very slowly try to kill me. It's Kiss of the Saber, season 5, episode 11.
As Jefferson began recording his world-famous radio series, suddenly he heard electronic machinery whirring behind the next door.
What is this show with bad writing involving lasers? That's what I want to know.
It's the Glenn Larson version of Magnum.
I'll let you know, because in the 1980s, lasers were king.
They were.
Lasers were the future. Lasers were going to do everything.
Yep. And they did.
A friend of mine... A friend of mine from elementary school was reading a book on lasers. I said, and one day in elementary school, and I looked at him and I said, why are you reading about lasers? He goes, they're the future.
Yeah. He said, in the future, all cats will be entertained by a laser.
Yeah, exactly.
And he wasn't wrong.
He's the laser pointer king of...
my cats won't let me go to bed before there's a laser. I mean, it's just true. It's true.
Lasers,
in
they're the
unmade
future.
Remake of the Graduate. One word, Benjamin.
Yeah. Lasers.
Lasers.
The 80s version.
There are two things that I know about, based on my growing up in the 1980s, Jason.
Yes.
One, the Japanese will eat us for lunch.
Uh-huh.
And two, lasers.
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 That's true. This episode features a constant cutting back and forth between the imaginary adventures of Sebastian Saber, who Betty is writing a novel about. Betty is present at the Robin Masters estate because Robin has insisted that she be there to try and write this book that she has not yet written that is really bad, folks. Really bad.
It is unclear how she came into Robin's orbit.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
because she is
very
not
much.
This is her first book, so Robin is a few weight classes above her, both literary wise and physically wise.
And there's no explanation. Like in some cases we've seen in this show where it's like, oh well, but she's an agent and therefore she runs in the same circles. There's no attempt. I feel like by this point in the show, they were tired of making attempts to explain why Robin wanted things. They're like, look, Robin offered her this, place to write her first novel. Like,
In the backstory I created in my head, she won a contest.
I was going to say, it's a little like the L. Ron Hubbard Writers of the Future contest.
Yeah. She found one of those ads in the back of the book, Can You Draw the Turtle? She drew the turtle. She got to go to Hawaii.
She wrote a sample chapter. It was a thriller that involved lasers, and Robin Masters sat forward in his airline seat, in his airplane, private jet seat, and went, wow, lasers, they're the future. And
now fly me to Japan. I wish to have lunch.
Right.
Could you set a scene in Marseille?
So Betty, we don't know why, but she has been given the run of the place. And they're, in fact, in the first scene, they're going to kick... Higgins is basically kicking Magnum out of his own residence in the guest house.
He's kicking him out of the guest house so a guest can live there. So that
a guest can live there.
There are two great things about that scene that I hope we don't gloss over. One, as Magnum is angrily packing, he makes sure to pack both the rubber chicken and the gorilla mask because you can't just leave those behind.
Nope,
because you never know when
you may need them on a case.
Yeah. Second, Magnum starts ranting to Higgins about someone just coming in and using the guest house and using up the resources, and Higgins is just absorbing it all, just very dryly. Yes, that would be terrible if some unwanted guest were to take up residence.
I love his line particularly. It's there are precedents for such presumptuousness.
Yes.
which and it just cuts him right off. He's like, mm-hmm. All so, right. Yeah.
But before that scene, actually, we get there for our first fantasy scene, because this is the thing that we discover here is that all of our characters, all of our actors are playing roles in Betty's, what turns out is her novel, which is all about Sebastian Saber, Kiss of the Saber. And Magnum is Sebastian Saber. He is a rich sort of spy dude. He's a James Bondian kind of figure. TC is his pilot in this.
His pilot and boon companion, it's sort of implied.
Indeed. Is he Swift or is he Winston?
No,
he's
is...
Winston.
Winston. Yes, Winston, yes. And Swift are Rick and TC.
Again, an amazing accent.
He gets to do an accent, and they give him a beard,
yes.
Which is amazing.
Yes, also true. And just so you know that this is ridiculous, when they land at the landing strip, which I think we've seen in previous episodes, it's this yes. like rural landing yeah. strip on the other side of Oahu where they shoot the rural landing strip scenes. It basically a small army runs at them with their fatigues and their Kalashnikovs, and... and Higgins, who is playing Boris the valet, places a hat down on the ground for Mr. Saber to kneel on in order to shoot at some of the guys. And literally, it is a whole bunch of people with machine guns running at them, and they very, very quietly, carefully, pick them mm-hmm. off one by one with their handguns. And this is the moment where you're like, well. This is ridiculous. Cut to Betty, and you realize, oh, this is the bad writer who is writing this.
And it's a wonderful cut because, you know, they take care of everybody. And like I said, it is like the Glenn Larson version of what Magnum would have been. Mm-hmm. And sorry, I had to cough. And as soon as they have wiped out everybody without reloading their guns, because their guns need reloading, if you look at them carefully. But no. They take care of the whole army of goons, all the Kalashnikovs, and they all stand, the three of them stand up, and they're like, well, I guess the case is over.
Yeah.
And they kind of look at him like, it's only chapter two.
Mm.
And that's when it goes, whew.
Here's a delightful reality. Thing about these the play within a play is that the characters in the made up novel keep like berating the author.
Yes.
Like when they don't like the direction a thing is turning, which I'm sure happens to people who
I can empathize with that.
Those are her inner demons.
So seen. Uh-huh.
Those are her inner demons there for sure.
I have actually typed things where it's, you know, Timmy Preston says, "Oh, forget this. No, we're not doing this." And then I just walk away from the script for like 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
This episode goes back and forth between these two things a lot. I'm just gonna put it out here.
Perhaps a little bit too much.
But I'm gonna say I really enjoyed this episode. I think this is one of the best episodes of Magnum I have ever seen because I laughed out loud at many points in this episode. It was not just sort of like an interesting historical document or a little nostalgia trip. It is so silly that it is like I was gleefully laughing at how silly, like purposefully silly, this episode is. And the example I'll give here that happens early on is not only do we see Magnum moving out and he has the rubber chicken and all of that. And he's got like a big, he just basically grabbed an armful of clothes to take with him. And he's standing there on the top step of the split steps before he goes up and leaves the guest house. But the great moment is that then Betty sees him. She sees him at the top as, or halfway up as Sebastian Saber. And it's Tom Selleck at his most kind of like composed. He's got a white suit on. He's super neat.
The dinner jacket.
And it's like, look, this is our leading man, Tom Selleck. He is a beautiful man. Look at him here. Isn't he great? And then he moves up the steps and there is a cut to Magnum at the top of the steps and he's got a rubber chicken sticking out and he's got all this dirty laundry. And it is such a great moment because it is everything about what Magnum PI is, which is we know he's that guy, but he's actually this guy.
Right.
I also enjoy the episode, probably not as much as you. I do like that it's silly, and it's a fun episode. It is one of the most fun episodes of Magnum. I would have liked it more if the actual real life, in quotes, the Magnum case that Magnum was stuck with was not stupid. And the Magnum case is very stupid.
It's pretty stupid.
It's stupid.
Like, it's
in a way
it's really low rent.
Yeah, in a way that I enjoy because it is such a contrast to this.
Well, they're Sebastian trying to do the contrast where it's a very boring insurance case investigation, and it's juxtaposed with this crazy yarn that she's spinning about lasers and jewelers and flying off to Marseille and Monaco and all around
the world. If I had a complaint about the real plot in this episode, it would really be that it turns out that she solves the case through her paranoia and yarn spinning. I don't know. I kind of would have preferred, and maybe it's 2020 talking instead of 1986, but I kind of would have preferred that the case really just be super boring, because like that's fits in with Magnum's whole schlubbiness. Like, no, it's an insurance case. I just need to get a statement so I can get paid. But it turns out it is actually a conspiracy.
A massive insurance conspiracy to commit fraud. And of course, there is that backhoe attack later
We'll get there. Because it is amazing, actually. I'm going to say it is amazing, not the way they intended, but it is amazing. So,
but before we get there, we're still in that first split, one of the things that is just, I just love this episode. This is probably why I write a lot of metafiction, because this episode hit me at the right age. The characters recognize how ridiculous their thing is. Both the Magnum characters and the Saber characters to varying degrees. But it is a comment on how schlubby Magnum's world is and how ordinary and plain, even though he lives on an estate and he's got the use of this helicopter and he's got a Ferrari, but it's still pretty low rent stuff. And when the other characters eventually read Kiss of the Saber and they're like, well, this is ridiculous.
except for Rick,
of course.
This guy is great.
I mean, of course, Rick, because he's a moron.
Yeah. Also, Rick has never come across better in life or in
that's
print.
True. That's
Rick
true.
Loves it.
And in that beginning thing, especially when they're doing the taking on that army. Originally, when I saw it in 80 whatever, the obvious comparison is James Bond, and the music is Mike Post doing his best James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually even more Doc Savage, because Doc Savage had his band of companions who would travel around the world, and they all had their very specific talents that they brought to the case, and they all had different nationalities and accents and quirks, and that's what Sebastian Saber and his team are. It's Doc Savage and his Fabulous Five or Fantastic Five or whatever they are.
So the line that I wrote down is, Sebastian Saber succumbed to the smooth, sensuous bite of his sherry.
Yes.
This show really good at bad writing, if that's a thing you can be good at.
No, it is a thing that you can be good at, because you can either do in bad writing unintentionally, which is dreadful, but good intentional bad writing is worth its weight in gold, I think.
It is a fine tightrope.
Kiss of the Saber is full of it, which is, I appreciated it. I also
in a matter of speaking.
I like that Betty is desperately trying to make Magnum's life exciting. And so the one that made me giggle is the is that we see, after we've gotten a sense of what Magnum is doing, that there's like Interpol's insurance claim, which is usually like, oh, but it's Interpol. It's very exciting. A man's hand was singed by a laser gun. He's a diamond cutter. The
world's
king,
best diamond
yes,
cutter.
And the King Solomon group is there, and there's a whole thing with Boris and all of that, who is Higgins. Like, it's so ridiculous, but it's also her trying to piece what Magnum is doing into her story, because she's desperate, because she has no idea what she's doing, and she was going to wrap it all up on chapter two, so she needs to keep it going, which ultimately does lead to a very, very boring scene where, because she's got the Ferrari, Magnum has to take another vehicle. And strangely, it's not the truck or another vehicle that we've seen before. It's a very sad two-door roller skate.
It's a Huruk Bugbear.
It's I looked it up. It's a Plymouth?
You sent the text to me the other day, so let me... I'm scrolling back through messages.
No, it's a Plymouth Champ is what it is. It is a Plymouth Champ. And you're like, why is he driving this? For comedy purposes, as a contrast to Sebastian Sabre, it's amazing that Magnum is driving this two-door roller skate car, this Plymouth. But I'm sitting there thinking, we've never seen this car before. They, you know, why this car other than for the joke and not like the truck or something like that? Friends, there's a reason, because he goes to the hospital. He meets the guy who got hit, who's part of the insurance claim. And, you know, and then Betty actually comes in and is like, maybe somebody's out to get you. And he says, and this is another one of those moments that I love so much, because she says this to him, and we've seen him, and he's laying there in the bed, and he's like, lady, I run a deli. Like, I didn't have mayonnaise one day, and a guy was gonna off me for it. And then they do this very nice camera trick where we are looking out the window into Cairo, and in an amazingly terrible accent, he is like, but I have never even heard of this King Solomon. And he is now the diamond cutter who has got the bandaged hands. And it's so
whose
great.
Whose name is Hans.
It's so great because it's so dumb. And it's literally like, because you're going along with the show that like, this is the most boring thing ever. And she's like, nope, I'm going to make it interesting.
And she is really into alliteration. Because yes. You have Hans Hands, you have the Sebastian Sabre, yep. The sip of sherry.
Also, he does mention, because the only thing we know about the guy, the deli guy, is that he was hit by a gray sedan. And it is funny, because in the fantasy world, there was also a gray sedan, which makes me laugh. It's like she couldn't really dress that one up. It's still just a gray sedan. But my
favorite juxtaposition between her novel and Magnum is... when they meet with the lawyer, reality, it's at this crummy little burger stand, and not even Dwayne's Ono Charburger, God rest its soul. Mm. But then they're having dinner at or lunch at a cafe in Paris, where a part of Hawaii made to look like Paris because they put some tables out.
It's that street in Honolulu lawn that looks like other cities that you've seen in shows like Magnum PI and Lost. Yep,
And it's kind of amazing. That character is played by Paul Gleason.
Paul Gleason, who, folks.
Yes.
You would know him from Die Hard.
We're going to need some new FBI guys, I guess. Yeah, absolutely.
And this is one of those, it's that guy who always played a tough guy.
If you needed a jerk in the 1980s and William Atherton wasn't available,
get down to Paul Gleason. But Paul Gleason, so in his real world performance here, he is basically that character. But the thing, and I was thinking as I watched it is like when he's got the script, he must have been like, oh, well, I got to do this because I spent half the episode with a really bad French accent.
Yes!
And it is a wonderfully bad French accent.
God, a terrible
he gets
accent.
To do this. Hey, mademoiselle, let us have lunch at the cafe.
You mean for this to be terrible, right? And they're like, yes, we do. He's like, great, I gotcha.
It is the most joyous Paul Gleason role I've ever seen.
Oh my God. He is
I can't think
blast.
Of one that even comes close.
He is having a blast, but I can't do a French accent. Perfect, Paul.
Five seasons into a hit TV show, and it's like they basically gave the entire cast and some of the guest stars an episode. It was basically Halloween, like just dress up in funny costumes and do wacky stuff, and who cares?
Do a crazy accent.
Yeah,
it's great.
Exactly. Yeah.
And Patrick Collins, who plays the deli owner /
diamond cutter,
who is another one of those that guys from the 80s.
Yep.
And he's a Belgian diamond cutter, and every time it goes to the fantasy. He is talking like this, and at one point, someone says to him, if you are Belgian, why do you have a German accent? And he goes, I don't know. And I just, that's one of the lines that always gets
me. Oh, my God.
That's a good one.
So,
I don't know.
So when
you were mentioning, Jason, that poor Dodge, the Plymouth.
The Plymouth Champ.
The Plymouth Dodge.
So when we come back out of the fantasy... And well, it was also a Dodge Colt, but it was the Plymouth Champ. It's the same car.
When we
get back out of the hospital, which might have been a hospital,
world,
although
Dodge Colt.
It really looks like a strip mall, but they say it's a hospital. In the parking lot, we have a you know that scene in A Fish Called Wanda where where the steamroller is very, very slowly coming at him.
Yes.
and he's like, no, and it's
Jen
just,
is coming to kill me.
It's hilarious. Yes. Because it goes on forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's a very slow thing that we get something like that here where Magnum gets in his car, this little car, and a backhoe is there, a large yellow backhoe.
Yep.
And Betty is there standing in the parking lot, and a masked man driving the backhoe very, very slowly and very, very deliberately.
Yes.
Taps like 10 times to very slowly crush the top of the car, the hood of the car, down in the roof, down in lower, so that if Magnum, I don't know, didn't notice for a long time and didn't duck or something, he might have gotten crushed. And then very slowly puts the thing back up, pivots around, and takes the backhoe, which cannot go faster than about 2 miles an hour, out of the parking lot. All the while, Betty is right there. It is the slowest attempt on Thomas Magnum's life in the entire series, and I am confident
on that.
I had
several thoughts here.
Okay. It's amazing.
Informed by the fact that our across the street neighbors are doing yard work now, and they've been using a backhoe. Not the most quiet, creepy vehicle that you would use to sneak up on someone.
Nope.
Second,
it's like the leaf blower murder probably doesn't exist, right? Because everybody knows when the leaf blower is the weed eater mower. No.
So already we have that, and they invent some stage business where the car is so crappy that the handles are coming off in Magnum's hands.
So he can't get out.
And he's fumbling to get out. Fine. Okay, that explains why he's
very
spent the past 20 minutes in the car while the backhoe positions itself to give it a couple of love taps. So once the backhoe does its job, and I said, surely our masked man who, and we're not doing it, he looks like Mil Mascaris from the Lucha Libre. The wrestling announcer should be going, from parts unknown, backhoe man. Now, I'm thinking, well, surely, having attacked Magnum quite deliberately, he's going to leap out of the backhoe into a car and race away. No, he's not.
No.
He's going to... Nope. Carefully drive down the street in the backhoe, ignoring the fact that maybe someone's going to call it in and say, "Officer, I saw a man fleeing on a backhoe."
Who just tried to kill a guy.
That just tried to kill a guy. And the Hawaiian police are, oh, that could be any backhoe.
It could literally,
There are too many backhoes in the island
driving
down
the streets right now.
Do you know how many backhoes are there right now? And three of them have guys dressed up like Lucha Libre guys. So
yes, exactly.
No, that guy's
Rey
got
Mysterio
a red and blue
Jr.
mask.
Rey Mysterio Jr. is driving his backhoe in Hawaii that day, falsely arrested by the police.
So,
very embarrassing.
So this is the thing though about the backhoe. The very, as I wrote down, very slow backhoe murder is I loved it because it's so stupid. It's so dumb.
Ridiculous.
We had different reactions to it. To me, that was the come on.
I mean,
come
on. Yes, all true. All true.
quit trying to dress up the insurance case with a touch of murder by backhoe. Murder most foul.
It was not. Again, I think the right thing to do was to have Magnum's case be boring. And they didn't go that way. And that you want more contrast in ridiculousness with the actual plot rather than this is just as ridiculous as the rest of the plot.
If they had done that 5-star episode and instead 4.5. Maybe 4.75.
Okay. It's still a great still a great episode. Later we meet a doctor who has an X-ray. He is looking at the poor deli guy who got hit and run. But in the fantasy world, he is a Dr. No kind of arch enemy with
Dr. Ling.
And they've got like a knife and Sebastian has a calculator which he can use to fire guided missiles and they have a standoff and then there's a fight and then Betty's in this as Colette. She is the romantic interest for Sebastian. And there is a funny moment where they say, "Hey, where did Dr. Ling go?" And they say, "Well, he escaped through a secret panel in the ceiling." And then everybody looks up.
Yep.
I love that.
Again, the moments when the characters do not care for the the scene they've been given.
No,
those are the grace notes of that sequence.
Having watched entirely too many Glenn Larson and Stephen Cannell shows over the years, that's the kind of thing they would do unironically in one of those shows.
Oh, it's ironically amazing. Done here. So then, meanwhile, in the real world, we have a very interesting twist to this very light, silly plot, which is the deli guy. We're outside the hospital again, the scene of the backhoe murder from earlier, and they say, he died.
The insurance guy comes out and says, "Don't go in there.
Don't go in there. He died already.
He's dead. The lawyer's in there. He's pissed. Don't go in."
Yeah, and so then Magnum reads the Saber book, and he's like, "Hey, maybe he really did fake his own death because this is all part of a conspiracy, and this is the thing that the plot hinges on, which is it turns out Betty has solved the case in a grand tradition of the guest stars solving the case and proving that Magnum is bad at his job. She has solved the case and written it into her novel." And it turns out that Bill and Ronnie have had hundreds, the doctor and the lawyer, have had hundreds of injury cases, and they're taking Superior Mutual Insurance, the fake insurance company with the fake name, to the cleaners. Now, this does happen. Like, insurance fraud is a real thing. That does happen. It does turn out that Ronnie's, like, it's his backhoe, and the gray sedan is his ex-wife's or something like that, and they're all on a barge to Maui or something. They're all in on it. It is all a fraud, and then they're captured and taken to Maui, and we get those moments where Betty says, "What would Sebastian Saber do?" And he's like, "Betty, this is not." She's trying to give him a pep talk, basically, because they're tied up and they're going to get executed by these guys who are bumbling idiots who are going to kill them instead of getting caught for insurance fraud. And it turns into a pep talk where Magnum's like, "Oh, well, all right, Betty, I guess I'll give it my best." And he tries to make them paranoid and turn against each other, which of course works. And he kicks a gun under the couch, and the chopper arrives, because in all of Maui, Rick and TC and Higgins have figured out where Magnum must be, because they were looking for the backhoe.
They read the book, and their Magnum senses were tingling.
And they were looking for a backhoe, and there's only one backhoe on Maui now. So
exactly, with a gray sedan.
With a gray sedan, that's
you got to put all the pieces together.
TC does use his Magnum sense, because they're like, "Oh no, you should go to the north," and he's like, "No, I think it's right here." And he's right. And that part of it, I absolutely love the first three quarters of this. That part of it is kind of silly and perfunctory, because again, it makes it be that the ridiculousness of Sebastian Saber bleeds into the ridiculousness of the main plot. And I would have rather that Magnum's life be revealed as being completely boring and dumb, but instead they're like, no, Magnum is your dashing hero. And it's fine.
And it's yet another episode where the chopper is the deus ex machina. That flies in and, okay, here's the backup and case solved.
No, it's deus ex island hoppers. Yes, what this show does. Exactly.
Now, see, I didn't mind the ending only because, it's kind of saying, yeah, we had a boring case, but we're also ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And so it's, he's commenting on that at the same time, which, I was like, all right. And we also get Magnum saying, you'd have to be crazy to take on four guys, which is reminding of his rule about only taking on three. Three is okay. Yep. Four is too many.
Four is too many.
Which I thought was a nice touch. And, he winds up, they wind up subduing everyone with their hands tied behind their back.
It's true.
Which was a nice little thing, too.
He's just using his brains and his legs to kick the gun under the couch. Yeah, those guys are also, Magnum makes the point. He's like, why are you? Well, first off, I do enjoy it where he's like, he said that we had this thing and we were going to double cross you. And the guy's like, no, I don't know. He's just trying to get in your head. And then the other guy's like, wait a second, I got to think about this. Like, oh boy.
And
you guys
and it's
are
great because he picks the right one to target.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's David Spielberg, another one of those.
One of those guys.
Guy,
yep.
Who's squirmy and untrustworthy, even to his conspirators.
Mm-hmm. And plus, he was the one who brought Magnum in on the case to do the investigation. So you can plant that seed of doubt. No, it's that part is pretty clever.
Yeah. These guys should really have just used an investigator who was crooked. Right.
Like, exactly.
That was their mistake.
Like that hot. They didn't hook up with that hot dog.
The hot dog computer guy. would have been perfect.
Computers and lasers are the future.
Oh, man. Laser See? Computers, can you imagine?
See. Maybe they went to Magnum because they had been using that guy, and he got arrested.
He got arrested.
Oh, ah, all the pieces come together.
Oh, man, the Greater extended Magnum universe. this episode is silly, and it's funny, and I laughed out loud, legitimately laughed out loud at the cuts between one side of the fantasy and the other side. I think it's really well done. I think it's well directed. It's funny. It's a funny episode. It made me laugh a lot, and not just ironically, but also just for the cute and cleverness of the story and the contrast between the ridiculous Sebastian Saber story and the regular old Magnum PI story.
We would be remiss if we didn't we discuss Rick, Rick's alter ego in this.
I was just going to say.
We sort of mentioned it, where he's Swift.
The luck-laden libertine and lord of the gaming tables.
Mm-hmm. He loves that guy.
Yes.
And Higgins is really offended by being just the manservant, Boris.
Who tells ridiculous stories.
Uh-huh. He's very offended by that. It hurts him. It hurts him in his heart.
And I loved trying to figure out Boris's accent, because it's still the Higgins voice, but he's letting his natural Texas drawl into it, and it's hilarious.
And he's trying to work some Eastern European thing
a little
in there
bit, yeah.
as well.
Because there's Winston, but he calls him Vinston.
Vinston.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's just so beautiful. It's so beautiful. There's a great moment where when Magnum and Betty are tied up, and it flashes into Saber World, where Saber and Colette are tied up, and there's the action sequence and people are fighting, and Saber gets knocked unconscious, and Selleck does this great thing where he's sitting and he gets knocked unconscious, and without even moving his upper body, he just kind of freezes for a second, then turns and falls on his side. It's amazing to watch that.
It's very good physical comedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anything else about Kiss of the Saber?
I love the name Humpy Weddington. Humpy Weddington, who lost his left ear in a tragic rugby mishap.
Oh, yes.
A freak rugby mishap. I'm sorry.
It's a shame.
Poor Humpy.
Poor Humpy.
All right, well, I got to go.
I bet that wasn't how he got the nickname Humpy, though.
And speaking of names, Jason, I hope you don't feel bad that her pen name is Philip Davy.
I don't.
I don't feel good about it.
I was going to say I don't feel good about it either.
It's like they're trolling us from the past.
Somehow they knew.
It's fine with me. What can I say, Vinston? And I'm going to get in my backhoe here and ride off into the sunset slowly.
Well, before you do that, Jason, there's a new segment we have to introduce.
Yes.
Oh,
I got to put my mask on.
I
don't
have to rush.
I'm just getting my Lucha Libre mask on. You go right ahead.
Yeah, if you're leaving on the backhoe, I've got like another 15 minutes to do this.
You've got plenty of time, yeah.
It's a tight 15.
It's a segment I like to call Remembrance of Magnum's Past.
Okay.
Let us think of all the Magnums we have seen. Magnum's past.
Yep.
Anyhow, I'm not telling tales out of school here, Jason. You celebrated a milestone birthday recently.
I did.
And I wrote my pal a note to wish him a happy birthday. And
yes.
I said to him, hey, I hope you didn't spend your birthday stalking a local newswoman and being a creep, and because that would have been. And Jason wrote back to say, "What the hell?
I didn't get it.
I do not understand what
I didn't get
saying.
It." And then 2 minutes later, I wrote back and said, "Oh, you mean like Magnum?"
Yes, like the terrible episode of 40.
40.
So this
that
really,
was 10
I think,
years
drive,
ago.
This really drives home the point I think that we tried to make in that. In that episode, which is, it's a terrible episode. So much so that two friends who watched it within a month of the reference I mentioned it to you, and it slid right off your brain pan.
I was concerned that you had famously stalked somebody for your 40th birthday.
Yep.
And I was like, that was weird, because on my 40th birthday, I just watched the Giants lose a playoff game. And then
that was actually on your 30th birthday, not to correct
you.
Oh,
you're right. It was on my 30th birthday.
On the 40th birthday, they were on their way.
They were on the way to win
glory,
the World
friend.
Series. You're right.
Yeah.
So
no.
And then like a minute later, I was like, oh, and so then I wrote back and I said, I've already rented the kayak.
Yes, exactly.
Because I know.
A nice recovery. But no, I think that we can officially, if you were wondering if we were too harsh on the episode 40, we were not.
We were not.
No, oh, no. Because no one, if I had said, hey, did you see the sunrise? You would have gone, oh no, please don't shoot
right.
me.
Yes, or
if I had said Merlin attack, you would have gone, no, please don't attack me with your bird. Both of which would have been terrible ways to recognize a birthday.
It's true. And you know what I would say? I would say now, if you warn me about an impending backhoe attack,
I'm going to know what you're talking about. I'm referring to.
Yeah, I will.
As much as if I said I tried to kill him with a forklift, you'd know.
I would
exactly.
know.
Exactly.
All right, it's
well,
Magnum.
Well, we
that's
we didn't,
that's remembrance
didn't
of Magnum's
even...
past. I've been your host, Philip Michaels.
We didn't even mention the most amazing double role of all, the lads.
The lads.
I believed they were different dogs entirely.
Amazing. Amazing yeah. how that is.
Those dogs have played like the parts of six different dogs on the show.
They have. At least so far, yeah. yeah.
They're getting
yeah.
their money. It's worth out of their dog budget, clearly. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's been Magnum Podcast. This forklift is rolling out. I've been Jason
beep,
Snell.
Beep,
they've been David J. Lohrer and Phil Michaels. Bye, guys.
You gotta have the backup noise for safety. Beep.
I'm just going to fly back to Monaco and then back to the Sabres scabbard and then back to Monaco. But I'll see you guys next week.
Stay there, Magnum. I'm coming with my forklift. Coming to get you. Almost there, Magnum. Give me a few more seconds. Just stay in the car.